On this edition of Magic Pod Squad, we catch up with Magic Man Aaron Gordon. Lots has been happening in the life of AG the last couple of weeks, so we certainly touch on the slam dunk competition, his thoughts, where he came up with the creativity for all six of those dunks that we had never seen before in a slam dunk competition. We go back to his early days when he first started to get good at basketball, the first time that he dunked a basketball, first time he finally beat his dad in a game of one-on-one. Who are some of his mentors and what it means to be playing in the NBA? Certainly he has passion for this game, but it is also a business. So we get into some of that as well. And what does this team look like here for the final 2 months of the season? And also go back to last year when Aaron Gordon got his first taste of an NBA postseason. Lots to get into with Aaron Gordon on this edition of Magic Pod Squad.
This is Aaron Gordon of the Orlando Magic.
This is Evan Fournier.
This is Jonathan Isaac.
This is Mo Bamba.
Check out what's new with the Orlando Magic Pod Squad.
The host of characters give you a behind-the-scenes look at Magic basketball.
The Magic Pod Squad has you covered. Subscribe and rate on iTunes and the Google Play Store today.
Oh, man, I'm looking forward to this. This is Magic Pod Squad's first opportunity to catch up with Aaron Gordon. George Galante is the fourth member of this Pod Squad. Do you honestly, do you know who George is?
Of course, man.
Everybody of course. Knows who George is. Right?
Do you like how do you George?
Not right,
how do
right. You not, is he hiding somewhere?
No, but he'll listen.
He's listening, though. Okay. He'll be listening to this.
We're not sure Dante even really likes George.
I'm a big David fan of George. Do. I'm Are a big.
You guys compliment each other well.
We do. Yeah, we do. We do. Yeah, we you got to have that good balance. Yeah. Is there a better balance than George and Joel? There may not be a better balance with those.
That's
two.
The yin and the yang PR of guys. Media relations, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. You know, I mean, nothing slips by those two if you got them together.
All right. Well, we appreciate you taking time. Are you a podcast guy? Do you listen to podcasts, or do you ever think about hosting one of your own?
Yeah, sure. Sure. Yeah. I think podcasts are really informative and funny. You know. Yeah, I've thought about hosting my own and listened to a couple of different ones, like the Joe Rogan podcast. Yeah. That's probably my favorite one.
We're probably not a funny podcast by any means. But
I think it's
try.
When George is here, it gets pretty funny.
It does get pretty funny. What kind of content interests you? If you were to host one, what kind of content would you be interested in? Guests, that sort of thing.
Just kind of, I guess, overall, you know, consciousness. You know, just trying to figure out how to be more peaceful, how to live a more peaceful life, how to alleviate suffering in everyday situations. And I'll obviously talk about basketball. Like the Knuckleheads, that yes. podcast is great too. Q Rich and D Miles. Vince's podcast is really cool too. DJ got his going now.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot going on out there. There's a lot of routes to take as well.
You've been on a lot of those. You've been on all those podcasts.
Yeah. Except for Knuckleheads.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. That's got to happen here soon. We got a lot we want to cover, but yesterday, the most recent event was the celebration of life for Kobe Bryant and Gianna. You had a relationship with Kobe. You worked with them. I know it's an incredibly tragic scenario, but as you think on your time spent with him and how you got to know him, what comes to mind? What are you most appreciative of your time with him?
Just how open he was. You know, I think as a player, he was kind of to himself, inwardly focused. And I think now that once he got done with his career, he was kind of starting to let people in on what was going on in his mind. And, you know, he really had a beautiful basketball mind and a great business mind and a very creative mind. I thought that was probably the most inspirational thing. You know, just how his mind worked was amazing.
Aaron, I was looking earlier because I was thinking, well, there's a possibility that you could have played against one of your, you know, the guys you admired and everything, but you never got a chance to play in a game, NBA game, in the 2 years that you've been in the league when Kobe, you overlapped with Kobe. Is that something that you look back on, you regret a little bit? I mean, it wasn't your fault. I mean, he was injured most of the time. But do you wish you would have had that opportunity?
Of course, man. So it was a little sad when I never got to play Kobe. I was always looking for him. You know what I mean? When we played the Lakers, I was looking for him, like, yo, what's up, man? Why are you not playing? I'm trying to go at you. And he just looks at me, he starts rubbing his knees. And I was like, okay, I understand that, man. You put in a lot of work. We always caught him at, like, the second night of a back-to-back or the beginning night of a back-to-back. He didn't really play those back-to-backs, you know, down the stretch of his career, down those last two years in his career. But, you know, you know, he just kind of assured me. He liked what I was doing, and he could see me. You know, he could see me. So it was important.
I think it's always interesting because I know, like, you know, when I was I'm old enough that, like, for me, like, Dr. J, Julius Erving was, you know, he was our guy, right, when I was growing up and everything. So it was always like, you know, I'm gonna play in the NBA, I'm gonna get to play against Dr. J, you know, and that was like when I first did it, it was one of the scariest things I ever did, but it was something that kind of, it made the dream real and everything. And so for the guys your age and everything that didn't get a chance, I always feel like that's probably a missed opportunity to kind of really, you know, bring this whole NBA experience, because I think it's important to bridge that gap.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. You know, just you know, just kind of seeing the example.
Yeah.
You know, left by these superstars, and
but to test yourself against, like you say, you always wanted to test. I think that's the biggest thing. It's like, can I really match up with this guy, or, you know, do I belong on the court? I think it's just, it just helps you make the adjustment, you know, because going from college to the pros and playing against somebody of that, you know, that you've always looked up to and everything. I just, you know, just curious on your thoughts on that.
No, for sure. You know, all the, you know, the Paul Pierces, LeBrons, the Chris Bosches, Dwayne Wades, Ray Allens. And, you know, these are all guys that were like your Dr. J to me, you know. Obviously, Dr. J is a one of a kind, you know what I mean? So that's pretty cool in its own right. But, yeah, it's just kind of like that test, you know. It's like, okay, I'm here. How can I elevate the game? You know, how can I supersede them?
Obviously, Kobe mentored a lot of players that many of us didn't know that he was involved with. Who were your mentors as you came up as a young kid? Who were the people you looked up to and that influenced you?
And I think two of the first pros that reached out to me, like as I was making that step into the NBA, were Andre Iguodala, the Arizona Wildcat, you know, so he looked out for me, and Baron Davis. Baron Davis is a California guy, so, you know, he's both characters, both great characters, you know what I mean, and just as real as they come. So those were two of the guys that really kind of, you know, tried to give me a little bit of insight. But I mean, it's hard to figure out exactly what you're in for when you first get into the league.
I would guess your dad had a major role in your development as well. He was a tremendous athlete at San Diego State, right? He played basketball. Tony Gwynn was a teammate of his, great baseball player. What impact did your family have on your development coming through?
Well, huge, man. It was a very competitive situation. My brother played. He's still playing in Poland right now. My sister played. She played D1 basketball. Pops played overseas for a little bit, played San Diego State. So we were always battling. You know, we were always battling. And my mom, she just had a tremendous work ethic. You know, so she's really where I got my motor from. And, yeah, you put that together, the motor and the athleticism, and then the know-how of basketball, you know, you get me.
What were those backyard games like?
Oh, dude, pretty gruesome, man. Pretty gruesome. It was like blood, sweat, tears. Kick the ball. Everybody goes inside, cool off, and then come back out.
Was there a pecking order? I mean, did, you know, were you
your
trying to rise?
Too, right?
Were you trying? Yeah, she was a good athlete too. Mm-hmm. Were you trying to rise to the top? I know your dad probably started out, you know, as the guy you had to beat, but that must have been some great battles.
Yeah, I felt like I had him pegged. Yeah, you know, from a young age, which probably wasn't true, you know what I mean? But I felt like
it.
It was the feeling, right.
What was the first, how old were you when you first were able, like, take dad one-on-one?
I was about 13 years old when I could finally, you know, make something happen and kind of get him.
And you knew that he wasn't just, you know, letting you have a bucket here.
That's
there,
his. Right? That's right. That'll be Aaron's story,
Anyone say that? Exactly. 13, 14 years old, because you know he had played so much basketball by that time. You know, his body had worn down on him a little bit, so I was able to kind of cross him over a little bit. And I just remember playing.
Do you remember where it was? Do you remember where you beat him in the whole bit?
Like, yeah, we 24-hour fitness. I do remember one specific play. I felt kind of bad.
Oh, you didn't dunk on your dad.
I crossed him. And
he broke an ankle.
Something popped.
Popped his ankle.
No, I think it was his knee.
Oh, no.
And I think that's when he hung him up for a good amount of time. You know, because he tried to get out there, and I rushed him into the game. You know what I mean? I was talking a little bit of junk. You know what I mean? Me, I was young, spry, didn't have to stretch or anything like that. Right. You know, he kind of followed suit. You know, he just kind of hopped back out.
Bad decision on your dad's part.
Yeah, exactly.
What was the first time you dunked? Do you remember the first time you dunked in a real event?
I was about, I don't want to say, 12 or 13 years old.
Good grief.
12 or 13.
And you were probably...
How old were you when you first dunked? 6 foot? Dante.
Yeah, 41. 6'2". 6'2"? 6'2". Yeah, 41.
I just beat my dad for the first time last year. I felt pretty good about that.
You know, it's funny. I remember the first time, like, my dad didn't play. My dad, you know, just was a fan, but he was... He hated to lose, and he just foul. I mean, he just. Mm. But I was probably 12 or 13, and I remember the park and where I was.
The whole scene.
He had one shot, Aaron. One. I always laugh. Dave and I laugh on the air. You know that running hook that DJ makes to the right hand.
To the right.
That's all my dad had. And but he can make that shot.
He made it, though.
He made that shot. But I remember because the backboard gave a little bit.
Oh, okay.
If it was one of those hard metal backboards, he'd never make it. But he had this one spot. But I remember the first time I got him, too. And he never played me again. So it was
over. After that, it was over. You said you got to go find some new competition.
Right,
huh?
So,
right.
Aaron, how special was the getting your jersey retired, Archbishop Mitty? I mean, you had so much success there. I remember when we drafted you. The big thing coming out of the war room that day was this everywhere he's gone, he's won, you know, and that was a big part of it, you know, your success at Archbishop Mitty. For that to come full circle, all the family and friends that were there, that had to have been a special time.
Yeah, it was incredible. You know, it's very overwhelming just to be recognized. You know, that's not why I played a game.
Sure.
You know, I played a game just for the love of it, you know, just that's it, you know, just because I love to play the game. I love to win. And, but just to be recognized and validated in that sense is a special thing. You know, it's a really special thing. And just growing up around that community and being a part of that school. And, yeah, it really has a great sense of community and to be commemorated for forever. Mm-hmm. It's going to be cool. I'll be able to go back there and have bragging rights, I guess.
No doubt. How tough is that transition? I mean, you obviously play the game because you loved it, but at some point you realize this is going to be a nice life for you. This is going to be a profession. You can still love the game forever, but you got to treat it as a business at some point. Mm. Just navigate us through that. What is that whole experience like when you know you got to? I got to put time in this and make this a business.
Yeah, I guess it goes at some point. It just goes to a job. Right. You know, it goes from less of a game to more of a career and more of a job.
But I think there's still a passion, a competitiveness to it and everything about wanting to be the best, be as good as you can be, I think. But yeah, there's a reality check, isn't there, that there's a job. It's a job to it.
I would say so.
So yeah. When did that come? When did that hit you, I guess, is what Dante's kind of, when does it change?
Yeah, probably like a year or two ago.
Is that right?
Yeah, because up until this point, you know, I figured I always knew about the NBA. You know, when you play basketball, like, that's a goal, to make it to the NBA. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, if I'm good enough at this sport, I can be in the NBA. And then I knew all the legends in the NBA. Mm-hmm. I knew if you play basketball to the point where you're good enough to get to the NBA, then basically the rest of your life will be taken care of. You know, your family will be taken care of. The people around you will be taken care of. You know, you can set yourself up to do whatever you want. Unfortunately, basketball is a means to an end. You know, it sucks. You know what I mean? The ball the ball won't stop bouncing, but at some point I'm gonna have to stop bouncing the ball. You know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but that's what's cool about basketball. You know what I mean? There's gonna be somebody else to pick it up and bounce it.
Well, what you say though is, it should be true. I mean, it should be that as much money as pro athletes make today, you should be set for life. But unfortunately, it's not the case for everybody. You know, people make bad decisions. They don't handle the fortunes that they make or potentially could make well. How do you protect yourself against those types of things? You have good people around you. I would assume you have some great advisors that help you navigate this.
Definitely. You know, I have a great advisor in Joe McLean. He's also a Arizona Wildcat and played on the team and just a great guy. You know, he deals with guys like Klay Thompson, Isaiah Thomas. There's a couple of different pros around the league. And for me, he put it in terms of a scoreboard, you know, which is easy for somebody like athletes to understand, you know. And he put it in how much you can save, and how much you can save is you end up running the score up, you know. So I save almost my entire
check. Are you aware? Do you keep up with what's going on, or do you just let somebody handle it and you don't bother with it? But are you a guy that wants to know what's happening with your off the court activities?
So every single month I get updated about just, you know, my entire portfolio, everything that I'm invested in, how much the investments are raking in, my net worth, how much is going out, how much is liquidatable. There's every single month I figure out exactly where I'm at and what the score is looking like on that scoreboard.
So you said you're a saver. You don't spend if you don't have to. I'm sure you treat yourself at times, right?
Yeah. I mean, at times I do have to definitely treat myself. But, like, I'm a simple guy, man. I really am. Give me a pair of shoes, some socks, some shorts, a shirt, and a ball. Put me in a gym, and I'll be good. Other than that, everything else is arbitrary.
Well, we got to get into this dunk contest, Aaron. You can't say it, but we can say it. You should have been sent home with the
trophy. I think we all. That goes without saying. Everybody agrees. We should have won. That's a given.
But you left before that competition, and you said, I'm going to do four dunks that no one's ever seen before. Mm-hmm. You did six.
Right.
You probably would have done eight if you had to. But the creativity, the imagination to come up with the dunks that you went there with, those four you were talking about, what was the inspiration? Where did you come up with that? How did you determine those four?
Kind of a multitude of places. A lot of it was social media.
Okay.
You know, seeing kind of like the N1 mixtape dunkers or the Team Flight Brother dunkers, professional dunkers, and being like, okay, I could probably do that. And then the one off the side of the backboard. In 2016, Elfrid Payton threw me one, and I did a reverse. I did a 180. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I was up there pretty high. I could probably turn that into a 360. So I tried it a couple of times, and it worked out.
Did you practice that with Markel?
Once before.
Really?
The
only one time.
One time in Chicago.
That's a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah, right.
I mean, really?
Did you think he was going to blow it for you, having the jacket on?
Yeah, but right. Aaron's in the spotlight, but if Markel doesn't throw a decent pass, I know you can catch almost anything, but still, there's a little bit of pressure on him too, isn't there?
Yeah, he did well though, man. This is a point guard, man. This isn't just a point guard, man. Yeah. Markel's going to be one of those special players that people talk about for a long, long time about playing points. So I knew that he's going to come through and drop a dime.
Well, you get the five straight 50s, which was obviously never been done before. Now you're looking around and you got to figure out what to do with your sixth dunk, and you grab Taco Fall 7. Just take us through that whole. How did that happen?
Did
who
you
gave
plan
you
that?
Who no. gave you the idea? No. How did that all even happen?
Yeah, I really had no idea what I was going to do, and I went to Shaq. I thought it would have been hilarious if I was able to jump over Shaq and dunk.
He turned you down?
Yeah, he didn't want to do it. Man.
What did he do? Did he just give you a look? Or did
he's like, I don't want to mess it up. And I was like, all right, dude, like I can understand you don't want to be a part of this.
And then you made eye contact with Taco?
I just kind of started hearing people chant Taco. You know, and I was like, okay, that makes sense. You know, the biggest guy in the gym.
Were you
trying
to
wait for you? Like, so here's the thing. So Taco comes out. Was there any doubt in your mind that you were going to get over?
Yes.
Over
were you confident that you could jump
exactly.
over him?
I mean, it's the biggest guy in the gym.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, my confidence was through the roof. So okay. I was trying to stick my whole arm in the rim, and it didn't work. It didn't work out.
But so, you can see there's a second there where you have a little look in your eye as you're standing there. Looking up at him, trying to tell him where to hold the basketball, and that had to all been processing through your head. What am I going to do here? Now I'm committed to it. I got to jump over this guy.
Right.
Well, the visual of those striped pants, those vertical stripes, made him look about 10 feet tall.
Right. Yeah,
that made him look even taller than he is.
Yeah, he's huge, and he's just like, man, I got faith in you. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to let you down, Taco. So it was good, man. He's a good sport for that.
He's a good
dude.
Did
you happen to see, this is the thing that gets me, is so like afterwards, like so everybody's texting and, you know, so he was robbed, the whole deal. And so then you start reading the tweets, right? So somebody comes up one and they talk about the world record for the high jump. Did you see that one?
It's
7 feet, okay, 11 and a half, 11, or something
eight
like
feet,
that.
8 feet, right? Yeah.
Yeah, basically 8 feet. Yeah. And the point they make is that you now have taken your center of gravity over a 7'6" guy and still dunked the basketball, right. Trying to put it in perspective.
Just
and,
crazy.
And I thought that's pretty good. And then I started thinking, I wonder if Aaron has ever, did you ever high jump in? Try it in high school or anything?
Yeah, I used to high jump a little bit. Yeah.
What's the highest you ever cleared?
It was middle school, so not very high. Like, it was only like
6'9" or something.
it was probably like 6'6", 6'7".
Middle school,
6'6", 6'7".
6'4",
6'5".
Yeah.
But obviously you wanted to hoist the hardware, but you're the people's champ, and everybody acknowledges that and feels and supported you that you should have won that. Did you? What kind of surprised you the most about everybody was weighing in on that competition? Did that surprise you, the support?
Yeah, it was great, man. It was really great. It was just awesome, you know. But now it's time to move on.
I like the comments about, you know, I want to get back to All-Star Weekend, right. But I want to be in a big game on Sunday night.
Right.
Yeah,
you know, that's a great way to focus, you know, going forward. So what do you feel like you've got to do to get to that step? What's the next step for Aaron Gordon?
I believe embracing a power forward role. You know, I believe that. I think that's a big step. And then just continuing to be myself. Be patient with the game. Understand the game. Be a student of the game. And then win. So those are couple of things that are going to get me there.
You said embrace the power forward spot. What does that look like? What's today's NBA? What define what you're talking about there?
For me, it's really like point forward, you know, being able to push the ball, handle the ball, facilitate, create plays, just kind of do everything, you know, just be a glue, you know, be a glue for the team, and do what's needed of me. Night in and night out.
Well, you did that in Brooklyn the other night. I mean, that fourth quarter, that was as great a basketball as anybody's played probably this year, that stretch that you had going really in the second half of the game at Brooklyn. Is that what you're talking about, where you're defending, you're making the right pass, you're knocking down threes, doing a little bit of everything?
Yeah, and that is what I'm here to be. You know, I'm here to be like the craziest Swiss Army knife that – anybody's ever seen, you know what I mean? That's the goal.
Well, take it. How much did you enjoy making it to the postseason? Obviously, I know you didn't enjoy the outcome. You know, you don't want to get there just to get there. You want to win, and that'll come eventually. But just that taste. You guys worked so hard to get there last year, to do it the way you did it. How much did that fuel you, getting to see what the playoffs was like?
Man, it was huge. It was huge. Like, it just makes you want to get back so badly,
right?
So badly, because the level of basketball is incredible. You know, like, the goal is to play at the highest level of basketball that you could possibly play, and that was a step in the right direction. And the intensity's there, the pressure's there, and that's what I love. You know, those pressurized situations. You know what I mean? Those are great, man. Those are fun. They make you feel alive. Mm-hmm. And that's like what playoff basketball does.
See, they can tell you that, but I would imagine till you go through it, You don't know that, right?
Right.
You had to feel that. Does it do something to you, that pressure?
Yeah. For me, it focuses. You know, it just makes me that much more focused.
You really work on your mind, getting your mind right, feeling at peace, that sort of thing. What kind of things do you do to try and get set, you know, to compete at a high level in a pressure-packed situation like you were in the All-Star, the slam dunk contest, you were in Brooklyn the other night in the fourth quarter of a big game, you go to the free throw line, you know, with the game on the line, right. You got to make big plays. What do you do to try to get your mind right?
Just clear it, you know, that's probably the best way I could put it, because, you know, through those situations, there's like 100 thoughts that race through your head that are all untrue, you know what I mean? It's just something that you're making, something that you're thinking about in the past, or potentially things that could potentially happen. But, you know, just try and focus on being where my feet are, being where my body is, just being completely present, and then just allowing whatever is going to happen, you know? Yeah, kind of going through negative thoughts, just complete positivity.
Oh, you're doing a good job with it, because I'm sitting here, I'm still thinking about the dunk contest, and I'm still pissed.
So. I'm still
glad you put it behind me, because I'm still struggling.
We're struggling a lot more than you are, Aaron. There's no question.
All lost my mind on Twitter for about an hour.
I think fans feel that way, too.
Right, yeah,
right. For sure.
But that's a big thing with you, being present, right? I mean, how would you explain that, and how are you able to do that at that moment? I got a big shot. I got to make a big play. I got to block. I got to come up with this block for my team. How do you go through that?
Like I said, I guess it's just kind of eliminating all the static. That's kind of like what I call excess thoughts. Mm-hmm. You know, the thoughts that I have nothing to do with what's going on right now, the moment. Like if it doesn't have anything to do with the play that's going on right now, then it's just excess thought. And so if you kind of just go through that static and kind of just like, I don't know, just make it not so... seems so important, you know, all the kind of like, whether you're sore a little bit, you mm-hmm. know what I mean, or you're tired, or, you know, you haven't touched the ball in a while, or I don't know, whatever, if you have stuff going on with your relationships outside of basketball, mm-hmm. you know, those are all things that aren't all that important. And then it allows you to just see the game much clearly and make reads and then just play the game that we love to play.
Stay in the moment, huh?
Oh, for sure. Sure.
Well, this is something you've had an interest in for a long time. Yeah, you know, since you first came to Orlando, met you, you've talked about, and you've had different people that have been involved that you tried to learn from in trying to master this. Not easy to do. Mm-hmm. Talk about some of the people that have influenced you, try to help you stay in the moment.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I've had like, you guys remember George Mumford? You know George Mumford?
I know the name, but mm-hmm. I don't know who.
He was he helped kind of Phil Jackson get into it, his Zen mode.
Yes, right, right. Okay.
They call him mm-hmm. the sleep coach because when he made everybody meditate, they went to sleep. I talked to George Mumford, and he was very helpful. You know, one of the things that he said was feel to be real, and that really, really resonated with me. It's kind of hard to explain. And then I have my sports psychologist and mental skills coach, Graham Betchart, who is out of the Bay Area, and we've worked a lot together. And it's just there's so many different tools and skill sets, just like training your body or grooving your jump shot. You know, you got to be able to groove your mind in order to eliminate that negativity.
What's interesting is you know. Probably everyone in the NBA to a degree is similar gifts, right? Athletic gifts. Mm-hmm. But the greats could do that. You hear LeBron talk about that. Kobe probably talked with you about that. Michael mm-hmm. could do that. The greats can get there, can't they? They can get their mind to, this is what I have to do. I'm focused on this at this moment.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, you see a lot of guys, like I think James Harden gets there. Mm-hmm. And it's just being in the zone, you know. That's ultimately what you're trying to do is just be in the zone. Like that's like the best thing in the world.
Once or twice. Hey, yeah, I'd probably count them on one hand, but yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. But it is great.
It's great.
But it's hard to get there, right?
It is.
It's hard to get. And I think Dante's right. The great ones manage to do that.
All right. Well, lastly, we got, what, 2 months left in the season for this team to do what it needs to do, and for you to help get this team there. What needs to happen? Brooklyn was a great start potentially for you guys, right? Is that kind of intensity? Is that what we need to see night in and night out? You think?
Yeah, that level of execution and intensity, everybody contributing, the ball moving around, is communicating with each other. You know, there's a lot that goes into it, but we're all plenty capable.
Does it matter to you guys in that locker room whether you're 7, 8, 6? Does it matter where you finish in the standings? You're just trying to win as many games as possible, and you know where you are. That's where you are.
Yeah, I think obviously we want to just win as many games as we can. If we can move up, that'd be great. Because you know, Milwaukee is a beast. You know, but at the end of the day, it's not about who we play. You know, it's about who we are.
Yeah, Coach Clifford talks about how, you know, the key is just, let's just play as well as we can possibly play. Mm. And then, you know, you take your chances against anybody when this team is right, playing well together.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. You know, I agree. And Coach Clifford has done a great job leading this team.
Can you get Vooch to get upset once every game at some point and start yelling at you guys? Or how does that? Yeah, I've never seen him that upset.
Come down and jack a couple shots and see how he reacts.
Just a little temperature check. All right. Well, good stuff, AJ. I appreciate you taking the time. It's a busy schedule, busy time for you. And we're all excited. And good luck the rest of the way here.
Okay? All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks, Aaron.